Register of Copyrights, and I would like to welcome everyone to our third day of hearings in Washington and our final day of hearings in the Section 1201 rulemaking. This hearing is part of our ongoing triennial rulemaking process mandated by Congress in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Section 1201A1 provides that the librarian may exempt certain classes of works from the prohibition against circumvention of technological measures that control access to copyrighted works. Any exemptions that are granted last for 3 years. The new ones will begin on October 28, 2009, and go until October 28, 2012. The purpose of this rulemaking proceeding is to determine whether there are particular classes of works as to which users are or are likely to be adversely affected in their ability to make non-infringing uses of the works if they are prohibited from circumventing the technological access control measures. This rulemaking establishes the record on which my recommendation to the librarian will be based. After the Copyright Office's initial notice of inquiry in this rulemaking, published in the Federal Register on October 6, 2008, the office received 20 comments proposing exemptions to the prohibition on circumvention and 56 responses to these proposed exemptions, all of which, of course, are available on the office's website. The agendas for all of the hearings, as well as the full record in this and previous 1201 rulemakings, are also available on the office's website. There are some hard copies of today's agenda near the entrance to this room. We do intend to post the transcripts and audio of all the hearings on our website within a few weeks. The comments, the responsive comments, the hearing testimony will form the basis of evidence in this rulemaking, which, after consultation with the Secretary for Communications and Information of the Department of Commerce, will result in my recommendation to the librarian. As I mentioned, the librarian's determination is due by October 28th, and he will decide the exemptions if they should issue. The format of the hearing is basically two parts. In this case, we have one witness, and that witness will present his testimony, and then the second part is we will ask questions, and hopefully we will ask probing, thoughtful, difficult questions. Let me now, and for you, one thing we do is we reserve the right to come back and ask you further questions. Frequently what happens is once we sit down and start to talk to each other, we realize that there are certain issues that we haven't probed deeply enough. So for those of you who haven't been here, though most faces look fairly familiar, to my immediate right is David Carson, General Counsel of the Copyright Office. To my immediate left is Rob Kasanik, Principal Legal Advisor and Assistant General Counsel. To his left is Ben Gallant, also a Principal Legal Advisor and Assistant General Counsel in the Office of the General Counsel. And to David's right is Chris Weston, an Attorney Advisor in the Office of General Counsel. A few notes before we begin. Yesterday, we had a lot of problems with cell phones and BlackBerry interference with our audio signal. So please turn off all phones and PDAs while you're in this room. Also, anyone who has not given us an electronic copy of the material that will be displayed, performed, or distributed in this room during the hearing, please be sure to give it to us before you leave. And with that, we will start the hearing with you, Mr. Rashur.
Thank you. I hope you all can hear me.
Yes.
Great, thank you. My name is Mark Reichert. I'm the Director of Public Policy with the American Foundation for the Blind. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I feel a little lonely being the only person for this panel. And I mention that not only because I'm sensitive about such things, but also in the past when we've come before you, and we've been here now, this will be our third time.
Okay.
You know, we've had folks on the other side speaking up. I believe that was true for both times, certainly true for the first time when we were here, speaking against proposing an exemption. We're here, of course, asking that the exemption that's been in place now for 6 years for certain literary works with respect to providing access to folks who are blind or visually impaired or may have other disabilities remain and, in fact, be renewed. We did submit, of course, formal written comments for the record. I wouldn't want to try to repeat that. I guess what I'd like to do today to provide as much opportunity for any interaction or questions you all might have is just to sort of give you a little bit of an update about sort of where we've come in these last 6 years. When we first came before you in 2003, I think folks were struck by the reality or surprised by the reality that there were I think everybody knows that DRM does obviously pose some kinds of sometimes often technical problems for providing access, but that people were surprised by the fact that when folks pull up ebooks, often with the kind of technology that folks who are blind, for example, use, that often a specific message would appear on the computer screen simply indicating, no, this book may not be read using a screen reader. Somebody had to take the time to sit down and write that kind of a notice out. It wasn't just a question of providing or implementing digital rights management technology to protect the copyright. It was an affirmative decision on someone's part that indeed this ebook will not be read aloud even with access technology. And quite frankly, we were rather offended by that. Essentially, what that looks like to us is a rather stingy approach to the exercise of the privilege of a copyright. Someone who provides an ebook for sale and a customer puts down good money for that ebook expects to be able to use that ebook like everybody else, just simply in an alternate way, by having a synthesized computer voice read that material aloud. Quite frankly, that should be permitted. So we came, made that case. We made that case again in 2006, and you all agreed with us that indeed an exemption for the exercise, try to get around those features, if in fact we need to get to the text of the book that way, was appropriate. In both of those times, in 2003, 2006, we had lots of questions to answer. How big of a problem really is this? How many books are we really talking about? And what's the scope of the problem? We've tried to provide some indication of that in the testimony we did in 2003 and 2006. The honest answer is nobody has sat down and done a scientific analysis of how broad the scope of that problem really is. Except that in the course of the last few months, an issue has come to a head, and some, if not all of you, may be very well aware of it. Amazon has made available the Kindle product with its new text-to-speech feature, and many owners of copyright through contract have essentially said to Amazon, we want to exercise the option to restrict that text-to-speech option, to essentially be able to turn it off. If the experience that we've been talking about in 2003 and 2006 wasn't bad enough, now we have a situation where folks are affirmatively shutting out folks with disabilities, and quite frankly, we think that that's unacceptable. So we're again asking you to approve, to renew this exemption for another 3-year period of time, especially now when we are at a point where we are, and believe me, this is not a 100% adversarial process. We've been meeting actively, the entire disability community has been meeting very actively with authors, groups, publishers, agents, the entire alphabet soup, essentially, in the copyright world, to say, why can't we all get along, essentially. So we do feel, though, that in that kind of environment, it's very, very important that an exemption remain for these types of works, so that folks who are somehow able to technologically navigate their way around those kind of barriers so that they can, in fact, read the contemporary American literature that's required for their college class or fill-in-the-blank, that they're not going to be subject to the rather significant penalties under the DMCA. So that's all the comments I'd like to offer, admittedly very informally, but I welcome any opportunity for dialogue or questions.
Thank you very much. Let me start. You should be pleased that you are alone. There is nobody sitting there opposing what you're saying. But are you aware whether or not Amazon has actually turned off the read aloud feature yet?
I don't believe they have. I think they're being pressured to do it significantly.
Okay. I think that's the only question I have, but you expect them to turn it off.
That's the expectation.
Okay. And nothing that the authors or publishers have told you have given you any comfort?
No, not to tell too many tales out of school. We've had meetings very, very recently, and I think we're still sort of at that articulating each other's points of view stage.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Reichert, in your submission to us, your written submission to us, your factual showing, I think, was based upon 5 ebook titles that you looked at to determine whether they were available in an accessible format, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in each of those cases, or in any of those cases, did you check to see let me start over. Each of those cases, I assume from what I read, that you looked at one ebook version of a particular book and checked to see whether it was screen reader accessible. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Did you check to see whether there might be other ebook versions of the same titles out there which were accessible?
The short answer is that those specific ones that we put in, I believe, were checked to see if the precise edition was available just as it was set up electronically. There may, for example, I think we did 1 or 2 public domain books, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were available someplace else in some kind of a recorded format. But the precise editions that were looked at there, I believe, were checked to see if those were available in an accessible format.
What do you mean by precise editions?
Well, I mean, it's especially if you look at something like the Kindle and you're told that one is going to read chapter 1, chapter 4, or talk about specific pages, or if you're talking about a collection of poetry, which specific ones on which page, that navigability of those materials is key. So I think even if one could find that, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 folks would provide an accessible version, say, of The Imitation of Christ, which I don't think was one of the ones we did this time. It was, I think, years ago we did
right.
It. Maybe we did it again. I don't recall now. But, I think one could certainly say that there is a recording of that conceivably floating around somewhere, or a text version of it floating around on the web somewhere. But that's not the same thing as saying that the one that I'm required to read with its footnotes, with its editing, is the one that's available.
Okay, well, let's get a little more specific.
Mm-hmm.
Your written comments say, on October 9th, 2008, we downloaded 5 ebooks created in either Adobe PDF or Microsoft Reader .lit format. Mm-hmm. 2 PDF books and 3 Microsoft lit format books were tested.
Yeah.
So for the 2 PDF books that you looked at, did you check to see whether there was a Microsoft lit version?
As well for that. No, I don't believe we did.
Okay. In preparing, well, first of all, you understand that the current are you asking for precisely the same exemption that we had last year, or are you proposing modifications?
We're asking for a renewal of what we proposed last
okay.
time.
Okay. You understand that the existing exemption is for literary works distributed in ebook format mm-hmm. when all existing ebook editions of the work mm-hmm. contain access controls that prevent enabling either the book's mm-hmm. read aloud functions or screen readers that render the text in a specialized format. In mm-hmm. other words, the only way this exemption works is if there is no ebook edition out there that has accessible text.
Well, of the work.
Yeah.
Of that specific work.
Right.
Which is as formatted, as navigable, as edited appropriately. So, I mean, it's not a question of whether or not you can actually simply get to content. It's a question of whether this particular book is available in an accessible format.
Okay, but, for example, is it your understanding that under the existing exemption, if a particular book that you want is not available in an accessible format using the Microsoft lit format, but is available in the Adobe PDF format, you would be able to circumvent the Microsoft lit edition?
I guess it would depend on if that's precisely the same work. I mean, if it's exactly the same work and it's available in one electronic format versus another, I wouldn't see that this exemption would apply.
Okay.
But I don't know that there are very many of those like that out there.
Okay. In preparing for this rulemaking proceeding, did you review the Register's recommendation from the last time around?
I'm sure one of us must have.
Okay, let me read you a passage from that recommendation. American Federation for the Blind did not test all of the e-book formats in which the sampled book titles were available. For instance, American Federation for the Blind tested The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis in the Microsoft Reader Lit format and found that work to be inaccessible whether or not Microsoft's text-to-speech product was installed. However, the joint reply commenters pointed out that the same title appeared to be available in the Adobe format with the read-aloud function enabled. Notwithstanding the fact that we observed that you really hadn't checked to see whether all formats were available last time, you didn't feel there was any need to do that this time either. Is that correct?
Well, I think the issue is whether, first of all, that we are the American Foundation for the Blind, and I think the American Federation for the Blind, I'm not even sure that there's an organization with that title. But
okay, that's my problem. We said AFB, and I misspoke.
No worries. So, but I think, I think that the issue is, what are we going to do in the event that there isn't an accessible version of the book available in precisely the format that the person wanted, desired, purchased, or in fact is required sometimes? If you have in the Microsoft Lit format and in the ebook, the Adobe format, the exact same work available, I wouldn't see that this exemption necessarily would apply. But I think the real issue is not so much the degree or the number of books that are out there, but what do you do in the individual case where someone needs access to the book that they want? And if, in fact, there isn't precisely that work available in an electronic form someplace that they can get access to, they should not be subject to the significant penalties of the DMCA.
Now, in 2003, the first time you made a case to us, you may recall you presented statistics relating to the overall percentage of e-books in which the read-aloud function was enabled. Do you recall doing that?
Yes.
You chose not to do that last time or this time. Can you explain why?
Well, as I say, I honestly think that the issue is not so much the scope. It's about providing protection for people who need access. And so whether we're talking one book or 10 million, I think that's why you have an exemption. If quite frankly, if we were to find that the majority of books or almost all of them had troubles, I think we wouldn't be here. We'd be making our case across the street on Capitol Hill, and indeed we may have to be doing that.
Okay, let me read you another paragraph from page 39 of the Register's recommendation from 3 years ago. In selecting a tiny sample of only 5 titles and in conducting only a limited examination of the options available even for those 5 titles, AFB has made, at best, a minimal showing to demonstrate the existence of a continuing problem and the need to renew the proposed exemption.
Right.
If AFB or others propose renewal of this exemption 3 years from now, that is, now, they would be well advised to review a larger, more representative sample of titles and ascertain the availability and accessibility of those titles in all e-book formats. When you were preparing this year, did you take into account at all what the Register had said 3 years ago, what I just repeated to you?
Sure, absolutely.
And you decided to ignore it?
No. I think the issue is, the facts speak for themselves, and I think the last couple of months demonstrate that the move in the e-book market is not to provide access, it's to restrict access.
So are you saying you didn't make your case initially, but the facts fortunately have made the case for you subsequent to your submissions?
Well, I think that what we've done is shown that over the last 6 years, certainly the problem has not gone away, and that language that you submitted was essentially originally proposed by publishers, and I think if they were here, which they have chosen not to be, they'd have an awful difficult case to have to make to demonstrate whether or not the progress has been made, as they made promises to you all in 2003 and 2006 that, in fact, progress would be made.
I have nothing more.
Okay. Right.
I have a couple.
Thank you.
It looks to me like we, at least in terms of what the prior exemptions have been and what you are saying you need, there's a discrepancy between them, because in terms of this limitation on all existing ebook editions seems to indicate that if that work is generally available in some kind of accessible format, then that would foreclose the exemption. But you seem to be indicating that if there is a desired version of a particular work, that that is what should be the critical factor. And I think that what we need to hear from you are what characteristics of particular ebooks are necessary for the purposes that for accessibility purposes, because I think we have to, if this exemption were to be issued again, there would probably have to be some kind of a clarification and giving some more guidance in that. Can you give some specificity to what features of an ebook would be necessary for accessibility?
Sure, I can certainly try. Over the course of the last 6 to 9 years, a lot of work has gone into the development of a so-called DAISY format book. I believe it's digital audio interface. I can't remember all the letters for the acronym. Essentially, it's a format that allows greater navigability of an electronic work. So a file, the format of the work is so structured that one can jump from chapter heading to major headings, sidebars, subsections within a chapter, etc. That kind of structure is pretty key if you're navigating around in a fairly sizable book. Admittedly, if one's looking at a basic novel, reading it from cover to cover, there's nothing but chapters there, perhaps chapter divisions or other major divisions, that kind of structure isn't as critical, but you still want to be able to navigate around appropriately. The alternative to that, of course, is what folks have been doing for years, which is to namely use, if one is using, for example, an audio format, once upon a time we used to put in cassette tapes and do it. Before then, I've got folks who remember the reel-to-reel days, and so there you'd be trying to hunt around for even the beginning of chapters. That's even true now with digital formats. Unless the book is structured in such a way, as I'm describing, one essentially has the only option of jumping around on the basis of time. How far into a book are you jumping? So the advantage or the key of having a book with the appropriate structure is to be able to do that kind of navigation. I think everybody on, quote-unquote, our side has always assumed that these exemptions pertain to access to a specific work, not just to whether or not if there are 4, 5, 10 publishers of a particular work that that it's essentially the underlying content that we're trying to get access to. In fact, we're really talking about the specific work that's expected. To jump to the Kindle fund, as I wrap up, the expectation now is, and I'm obviously picking on the Kindle, but there's going to be other equipment around the corner. The expectation is that equipment like this, technology like this, is going to be used for educational purposes. And I don't see how we can talk in a very serious way about saying that, well, you can have access to this material, perhaps an earlier edition of the textbook, perhaps a comparable version of the psych book, or a comparable version of the anthologies available, so you can hunt around on your own and find that material. I think it really needs to be specific to the given work.
So then if a work was not available in this in the DAISY accessible format, that would be what would kick in the exemption?
Well, I think what would kick in the exemption would be if a specific copyrighted work, and I'll just hypothesize an anthology of short stories, if that specific one is not available by that publisher in any kind of accessible format, then I believe this exemption kicks in.
In any kind of accessible format. That's what I'm just trying to clarify, is what exactly how you're characterizing accessible. So if it was, and what level of accessibility would be sufficient so that the exemption would not apply?
I'm not sure that I think we may be comparing apples and oranges. The way that we read the exemption is that there may be digital rights management features put in place to bar certain types of accessibility, like screen reader access or text-to-speech capability. And what we're asking for is that if someone can find a way to get around those features, even if the accessibility they ultimately achieve as a result is inferior to what could conceivably be available, that they shouldn't be subject to the DMCA penalties.
So if a book was available in the text-to-speech on Kindle, too, and would that be providing accessibility at that point, or what if it doesn't allow then the connection with the doesn't allow interoperability with other forms of accessibility?
The honest answer is that I have not played around with the Kindle much at all. Part of the reason for that is that the controls on the Kindle itself are inaccessible, and so that's yet another aspect of this that we're working on. I would say that as I understand the type of text-to-speech feature available, it provides a level of accessibility, and I'm sure that it's not as robust as other, you know, formats that are available through such well-known organizations in our community, at least as Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, that provide books routinely in this sort of structured format that I'm describing, where in a read aloud volunteer reader will essentially read a book aloud, and you can navigate around in that much more structured way.
Do you have any sense whether this exemption that is issued for the last 6 years has had any effect on the market? Has this helped things? Has this exemption being in existence changed behavior by copyright owners?
Well, it would appear not, if the last couple of months are any example. It seems to me that I don't really think that what's happened in the last few months as this text-to-speech issue with Kindle has come to a head, that that's a result of any of this activity. I'm not sure many folks in the copyright world are paying much attention to it. I can say that, to the exemption, that is, I can say that with respect to folks who are blind or visually impaired and may have other disabilities, that, you know, the community is aware of individual, brainy, very computer savvy folks who've been able to avail themselves of this exemption, and that they've been able to find a way to get access to books when they've needed them. I don't know of any, and I don't think anybody else knows of any, you know, concerted effort yet to sort of broaden that. So, on the side of the copyright owners, I would say no, there really hasn't been, frankly, much attention paid to this exemption, except every 3 years when we come here. And if this Kindle situation is any example, it would appear that we're obviously going in the wrong direction. And in terms of our community, as I say, there may be isolated examples of folks finding a way to crack DRM to be able to get access to the materials, but there's no widespread effort that I'm aware of that's been successful in that connection.
Are you aware of any individuals or who have actually utilized the exemption?
As I say, I think the community as a whole knows of, in general terms, you know, particularly smart, capable individuals who've been able to find their way around these barriers, and obviously because of the exemption, feel safe in doing so. But as I say, I don't know of any concerted effort to make that happen yet.
But then specifically, you know that there may be people savvy enough to get around it, but you don't know whether they've actually fulfilled the terms of the exemption in terms of having looked to see whether there are other accessible formats or...
No. I mean, we're not in a position to police that kind of activity. We think the copyright owner is in the best position to do that.
One thing that we found in 2003 was that rather than some kind of concerted effort to deny accessibility, there were certain defaults set into some of the systems. Mm. For instance, Adobe. And I believe we saw in 2006 that there had been some change in that, in light of the fact that there was greater realization of the effect of those defaults. Do you have any sense that is changing in any way, that there are, although there may be some disputes like with the Kindle 2, and there are issues between, as far as I understand, the Authors Guild has been urging for Amazon to create an accessible, or to open books up for the Kindle up for accessibility. Greater awareness? Is the heightened awareness of this attributable just to the general publicity that's occurred with the Kindle 2, or does this have any relationship to the exemption?
I don't think there's any way to know the answer to that scientifically. I really don't. I mean, I think...
Anecdotally, it would be fine.
I would say anecdotally, one of the major things that the American Foundation for the Blind does, we're not a membership organization, but what we do, or hope to do, is to provide, and I don't, that's why I'm here, I don't provide the kind of technological eval that some of my colleagues do. They actively work with Adobe and other providers all the time. Has there been movement, openness to talking? Has there been some improvements? Have there been improvements in technology over the course of this 6 years? For sure. But what we're still seeing is that digital rights management is being used as essentially the fig leaf to exclude folks from receiving access in a way that's meaningful for them. And, you know, I think folks need to understand that it becomes... almost an emotional issue as well as a, you know, substantive legal or copyright issue for the community when folks are being told you paid good money for a work and now if you want to actually be able to read it with technology that you bought, you're either going to have to pay us extra or you're going to have to buy some other book because I don't care to have you read my work. Or you need to register, which is what's being proposed now, that you need to declare your disability, and if you're sufficiently disabled to someone's satisfaction, then you'll be entitled to read our book. And I think what we're simply saying here is that while all of that is sort of shaking out, that this exemption be in place so that if people do in fact need access, they're not going to be subject to the penalties of the current law.
And are there any changes given some of the changes in these, like in Microsoft Reader or Adobe formats that are either getting better or worse in terms of providing accessibility?
I think the folks who are particularly steeped in technology and my and other groups, if they were here, they would say it's sort of... like a shell game. You fix something in one area, and then, of course, technology changes, and so you're constantly trying to shore up things in other areas. So it can be very frustrating, for sure. Thank you.
Can I ask one last question? If a visually impaired person is looking for an e-book, I think what I heard you saying, there's no way when you purchase that to know whether or not the features that you need in order to make it accessible to you are available on that ebook, that you have to purchase it and then find out later whether it works or not. Is that right?
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have no more questions, and so we may get back to you, but at this moment... we're done with this part of the hearing.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the questions.
What? Break till 11.
I guess because Steve Metalis isn't here, we're breaking till 11.
And Joe Montoro's not here either.
Well, I see he was. He just left.
Oh.